Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.
I am delighted to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week, Aaron Smith. Aaron has been a participant in several initiatives of Occupy Wall Street, from park maintenance to research on the financial system. Currently, he is primarily involved in the Rolling Jubilee, a project to purchase defaulted debt on open markets and abolish it. The Rolling Jubilee is meant to demonstrate the injustice of the debt system and make lives better in the process. Aaron is also a host of Occupy Wall Street Radio on WBAI. Aaron Smith, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
It's terrific to have you on here. So I guess one of the websites is strikedebt.org and another is rollingjubilee.org. What is the Rolling Jubilee?
So the Rolling Jubilee is an idea that's been kicking around in activist circles for a couple of years now. And the basic premise is this. The strike debt is a group of people who came together and, you know, on the premise that a lot of the reason that people were drawn to Occupy Wall Street is the immense amount of debt in their lives and the fact that it was constraining them from living the lives that they wanted to live and the fact that they had to mortgage their futures to pay for basic needs like housing, healthcare, and education. So we wanted to come up with ways to help people break through that and break through this sort of individualizing, moralized mindset around debt. They really felt that debt was their problem, and they really felt that debt was their fault, and we wanted to show them that they were actually being preyed upon by a system that was much larger than them, and that people who had things like mortgage debt and student debt and healthcare debt, though they may even live in the same house, and they may not think of themselves as part of a common interest group. We wanted to show them they are. So we took this idea that's been kicking around for a couple of years now, which is this. It is the case in the United States that lenders are required to sell off their non-performing debts after a very small amount of time. It varies from state to state and by kind of debt, but it can be as little as 60 days. So,
and what is a non-performing debt, just so people are clear?
So it's a debt that there hasn't been payment on for something like 60 days. It depends on the state and the type of debt, between 60 and 180 days. But you can imagine a medical bill. I mean, I'm sure most of your listeners have read a medical bill recently. I can't even tell whether or not I'm being charged money on most of these things, right? So it's quite reasonable that these debts can go unpaid for 60 days. So when this happens and the lenders are required to sell off those debts, because they're required by law to sell them off, they sell them off in bulk to these firms called debt buyers. So the debt buyers just buy every month all of the non-performing debt, all of the unpaid debt in bulk. And so they pay very little for it. They pay pennies on the dollar. In addition, the lenders also get a tax write-off, the amount, the difference between the face value of the debt and the amount that it was sold for. So what you end up with is just 1 or 2 cents on the dollar. Usually we've been telling people 5 cents on the dollar, but that actually turns out to be an overestimate. The basic premise then is that once those debt buyers buy that debt for very little, they repackage it and sell it off to debt collectors. And these are the people who use threats of violence or show up at your house or intimidate you into paying 100 cents on the dollar. So they have an enormous profit margin if they're able to get you to pay or if they're able to find you. So what we did and what the idea has been, instead of the debt collectors buying this debt for pennies on the dollar, we buy it. And instead of coming to your house and threatening you, we send you a letter that says you don't have to worry about this anymore. And more to the point, now that you know how little this debt was purchased for, you don't need to deal with debt collectors again in the future. You can refuse them entirely because they didn't pay very much for this, and they're quite willing to move on.
How much money have you raised for this, and then how much debt have you abolished for people?
Right. So we conceived of this as a sort of demonstration project. Right. We started accepting money in November of last year, and our idea was that between November and the end of December last year, end of December 2012, we'd raised $50,000, which we thought would allow us to buy, including overhead and all of our other costs, about $1 million worth of debt. We thought that was a nice round number and would allow us to get some media attention and make a point. We put up a blog post about a week before we held a concert last year in order to try and raise this money. We put up a blog post just letting people know what we were doing, and we'd raised $50,000 in one day. So it turned out people were really interested by this idea. By the end of the year last year, we'd raised something like $500,000, and at the moment, we're close to $650,000. So with that, we've purchased 4 packages of debt, and the total market value of the total face value of that debt is just a bit over $14.5 million. And we still have a couple hundred thousand dollars left, and we're going to use that to buy other kinds of debt very soon.
It's a remarkable accomplishment. So it's are you starting to think of it less as a demonstration to make a point, and a little bit more as a substantial accomplishment of good in the struggle against indebtedness?
Oh well, it was always going to be both, right? I mean, let's not diminish the fact that we've helped thousands of people. That's never, you know, that was never a minor part of this. But it is a demonstration. You look at the size of the secondary debt market in the United States. $100 billion a year worth of debt is traded every single year. We're not even a drop in the bucket. We don't even rise to that level, right? And it's not simply a matter of just raising more money, you know, trying to like woo the Ford Foundation or Bill Gates or something like that to give us a whole bunch of money. It would be a qualitatively different type of endeavor to try and buy all of the debt and abolish it. What we've been focusing on is encouraging people to really resist the debt at the start. We're not going to come around and buy all of the debt, but what we can do as a class is refuse this debt when it's brought to us.
And if we include in the statistics debts that people are making every payment on time, no matter how unjust or straining that is, then we're talking about trillions of dollars that Americans are in debt.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of it has been, you know, a lot of the people are really reshaping their lives around, you know, taking third jobs or working in careers that they hate or foregoing things like having families in order to pay, you know, student loans, which is just criminal. It's absolutely criminal.
So when you buy off this debt, are the sharks that you're buying it from making money? And how does this, you know, paying off the debt strategy mesh with the strategy of resisting and refusing to pay back debt?
Yeah, so that's a fantastic question. That's right. So if what we were doing was buying all of the debt, we would essentially be just, you know, paying off the people who were creating a lot of the problems that we're trying to stop. But what we're doing is we build relationships. So this is not an open market. It's not like you just go to a website and choose some packages of debt to buy. It's part of the problem here is that it's a shadowy market, and there's a bunch of people who have personal relationships with each other who trade debt back and forth. And we ended up making kind of our key contribution here, actually, was that we ended up making friendships with some debt buyers of a certain moral stripe. So these are the people who package the debts and then send them off to debt collectors. And they are really troubled by what they see going on in the country and in the world, and they wanted to help us do something about it. So we've been working with them, and I can assure you we are not enriching them in any way. You can look at the full summary of how much money we've spent. It's on rollingjubilee.org/transparency, and you get a sense of, you know, just the fact that what we're doing is really kind of a drop in the bucket, both to the market as a whole and to those debt buyers individually. But it's an important psychological point. It's one that we hope to continue making.
And just in terms of the general inequality and imbalance of wealth in the country, presumably you're not getting this $600,000 from the multi-billionaires who have concentrated half the wealth in the nation, and you're not getting it from the trillions that the government spends on wars and other evil things. Where are the hundreds of thousands of dollars you're raising coming from?
That's right. So we've received about 15,000 donations, so an average of about $40 each. And I think the largest one was just a hair over $5,000. But we've received hundreds of donations that are just $1, which is just remarkable. That's the thing that really gets me, because after, you know, the PayPal processing fees and whatnot, that comes out to about 67 cents. But almost every one of those $1 donations comes with a note telling us how touched they are by what we're doing, or how much they want to help, or how inspired they are to refuse their own debts as a result. And that's exactly the point of what we're doing, and that's I think the best part.
And we are speaking with Aaron Smith, and you can check out and contribute a dollar or more at rollingjubilee.org, and also take a look at strikedebt.org. And Aaron, you told me before we went on that at strikedebt.org/act, there are other actions that people can engage in apart from the scheme of paying off debt and buying it back on pennies to the dollar. What else can people do more easily at home?
That's right. Thank you. So if you go to the website and you try to donate right now, you're sent to a page that tells you that we're closing the fund on December 31st of this year. And the reason that we're doing that is that it's drawn a lot of attention, not only our attention, but also a little bit too much attention away from the primary purposes of strike debt, which are to sort of, in the long term, really undermine the system entirely. So what we did at strikedebt.org/act is we have started collecting, and we're going to continue collecting more tips and tactics that people can use to resist debt. So I'll give an example of one. It turns out that when the debt is traded back and forth, it's a lot like mortgage-backed securities, where the people who are trading them don't necessarily pass back the paperwork that's necessary to prove that they actually have the right to collect on that debt. Now, of course, when they call you and they demand payment, you're frightened, and you do your best to pay 100 cents on the dollar. But they, more often than not, in fact, there was a study done a couple years ago by DC 37 Union in New York that tried to just ask for documentation of from debt collectors of the debt they were trying to collect on. And they found that 95%, literally 95%, 19 out of 20 cases, so they did 280 some odd cases, they found 19 out of 20 cases could not substantiate the debts, and therefore they had no right to be collecting on those debts, and they had to get rid of them. So if people, there's a group called the New Economy Project in New York that created a form letter. All you have to do is print out this form letter, it's linked on our site, fill it out, and mail it as a certified letter. And if they can't respond with legally binding documents, then you're free and clear. And for the price of a certified letter, it's just worth trying. You know, it's just worth taking 30 days and waiting to see if they can come up with the response. And the initial study suggests that 95% of people are going to be able to get rid of those debts without having to pay a dime.
That is remarkable. That's better than pennies on the dollar. That's nothing on the dollar. That's the way to go. What else can people, and this, these debt traders, by the way, that are buying this stuff themselves for pennies on the dollar and trading it around, has this just been going on since the 90s or so, or when did this start?
Growing out of the savings and loan crisis, there was a secondary market for debt because the government didn't want banks and large lenders carrying non-performing loans on their books for too long. Of course, they figured out how to do that anyway with securitization in the late 1990s. So the banking industry always digs its own grave and then expects us to haul them out whenever they fall in. And they'll do it again and again and again. So there's no reason for us to sort of attach ourselves when they're going to go jumping in there.
Well, if everybody sends a certified letter challenging their debt and 95% of them work, maybe they'll crawl out of this grave.
That'd be great.
What else can people do to address the debt injustice in the country?
Yeah, so I've pointed out sort of an individual solution, the sort of resisting of debt collection accounts. In the long run, what we're really going to need is collective action. So that means something like a debtor's union. Which is an interesting concept that's been kicked around for a little while and is going to need some new types of tools to really help it get kicked off. And that's our primary focus right now. That's what we're going to be working on over the next couple of years. And the basic idea here is that if you look at it, people think of themselves as owing money to, some servicer in Illinois or some local bank or something like that. But because of the way the debt is traded, because of the way securities are traded on the secondary market, it turns out that the vast percentage, this will be no surprise to your listeners, the vast percentage of the debts that we owe go to the same five institutions, and you can name them off the top of your head. So when we think of ourselves as mortgage holders or student loan holders or medical debt holders, we don't think of ourselves as having power over these institutions because we don't realize that we are all connected to these institutions. So there's an old saying by J. Paul Getty, funny enough, that if you owe the bank $100, then you're in trouble. But if you owe the bank $100 million, then the bank's in trouble. Well, individually, we owe the bank $100, $3,000 each. Together, we owe the bank their entire livelihood. We owe the bank hundreds of billions of dollars. And if we collectivize and we find out the routes from the mortgage that I hold and the student debt that you hold back to those big institutions, we can collect ourselves and say, large institution, we have $100 billion worth of your debt. We are going to withdraw payment unless you start cutting us some way better terms right now. So this is exactly the sort of collective action that we're hoping to foment over the next couple of years.
Are there any examples of this beginning, or is this still in the forming the idea stage?
Yeah, so throughout history, when debtors have banded together, they've won. So there's the El Barzon movement in Mexico. More recently, there's a co-op city rent strike here in New York City in the 1970s. Ongoing right now in Cleveland, there's a mortgage strike being put together by an organization called ESOP. And what they're doing is, instead of paying mortgages to the banks, they're paying it into an escrow account. And that escrow account is growing into the millions and millions of dollars. And the group of mortgage strikers are able to speak to the bank and say, listen, you know, we've got these millions of dollars that are not coming to you. If you want access to any of it, we need a principal write-down. We need to write down the value of our mortgages to fair market value. So it's exactly what's being tried with eminent domain and other places, but in a much more bottom-up and much more democratic way.
And in Iceland, when they faced a similar crisis to that in the United States some years back, they wrote off people's debt as part of a solution that wouldn't be heard of on Capitol Hill. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's, you know, the sort of... Jubilee is very important. I think it's very important to get rid of the existing debt right now, particularly in student debt. I mean, we've got a completely unsustainable system right now, and it's just $1 trillion. I know saying just $1 trillion sounds somewhat ridiculous, but we're providing about $83 billion of quantitative easing to the five largest banks every month in a sort of like trickle-down stimulus effect. It would be far more effective to just write off the student loans or to do principal write-downs for mortgages. And so that's very important. But in order to prevent us from getting back into this hole again, we need to move away from a system where people are required to mortgage their future to pay for basic needs. You know, there are things like healthcare, there are things like housing, and there are things like increasingly education, which is just sort of a basic requirement for getting a job in the United States, that are what economists call price inelastic, right? So no matter how high the price goes, you're going to pay those hundreds of thousands of dollars for your surgery because you want to live. And if you allow people, or if you require people to take out mortgages, to take on debt in order to pay for these things, they're going to take on as much debt as you can possibly give. So what you're creating is a class of indentured servants. And we can't have that anymore. We have to move away, and we have to move to different ways of providing these types of services that aren't based on debt financing.
And student debt is a kind of debt that you haven't been able to purchase, right? You can't get people out of that.
That's right. So the vast majority of student debt is federally guaranteed, and so there's no reason to trade it because you're going to get payment from the government no matter what. People's income tax refunds are being garnished. Their Social Security payments are being garnished. There's tens of thousands of people are having their Social Security payments garnished in order to pay their student loan payments right now. So there's no reason to trade those. There are some private, non-federally guaranteed student loans, and we've seen portfolios of those, and we may, in our next debt purchase, be purchasing those as a way of making a point about the education system. But it's going to be packaged in with a lot of other actions focused on things like student unions. So there was an uprising in Quebec last year that you might be familiar with, where students across the entire province refused tuition increases because they didn't want to turn into the United States. They didn't want to begin the spiral of indebtedness that happens to students in the United States. So as a result of that, you're seeing student unions pop up all across the United States right now. And people are starting to organize towards tuition refusal. And we want to shine a light on that. So if we do buy student debt, it will be part and parcel of trying to foment more student unions here in the United States.
There are quite a few states now with Oregon in the lead that are looking into the possibility for state college education of not charging upfront tuition, but having students pay a percentage of income for a number of years, 3% of your income for the next 20 years after you get out of college. Is that sort of proposal that is better and fairer than what we have now worth pursuing, or is that not good enough because it's not actually free education?
Both.
Both.
We're friends with several of the people who created the Pay It Forward proposal in Oregon, and we're working with them to develop better proposals. We've written critically about this in Jacobin Magazine and in Destep Magazine. So the problem with Pay It Forward, it's certainly better than indebting people right now. But part of the problem with Pay It Forward is that it's still very individualizing. It's still the case that it's a regressive tax, that you know, people who have very little money are going to end up paying more of their disposable income, more of the income that they need to use to survive in order to pay off this debt. And the numbers that are being tossed around right now, 3% of your income for 24 years, are really just a starting point. You can imagine what will happen when you know there's a shortfall. You can also imagine that there will be ways for people who make very large amounts of money in a single year, sports players or something like that, to get out of it. We go through an exhaustive list of the problems with Pay It Forward. I think it's great that there are new ideas being tossed around in terms of how we pay for education. But at the core of the issue is that there was state funding for education before. The University of California used to be free until Ronald Reagan decided he wanted to break Berkeley. And, you know, austerity was a political choice, always has been. And we need to not take the attention away from that. We need to bring the attention back to the fact that this was a free, this was a public service, and totally could be a public service to get.
And similarly with medical debt, it is what we need, a single-payer, guaranteed, free health coverage for everyone system like other nations do, or is there some other step?
Right. So this is another, people respond often, you know, the Affordable Care Act is going to fix the medical debt problem, and that's absolutely not the case. It didn't fix the medical debt problem in Massachusetts when it was called Romney Care. In 10 years there, the medical bankruptcy rate has not decreased at all. In fact, the one story that's been posted by a debtor that whose debt we purchased earlier this week, the one story that's come out so far, he's in Massachusetts, and he has emergency room debt that we abolished for him. So the ACA is essentially a copy of that. It didn't solve the medical debt problem when it was called Romney Care, and it's not going to solve the medical debt problem when it's called Obamacare. We have to move away from an insurance and a private for-profit model and towards a single-payer model, like is done in the rest of the civilized world.
And what about housing? How do you get people into houses and apartments without debt?
I mean, that's a good question. There are enormous examples of cooperative living spaces. And you know, when I say that, it sounds like some kind of like frat house in Berkeley or something like that. If you look at Co-op City here in New York City, there are widespread examples of places where people share in the ownership of their living space without having to take on massive amounts of debt in order to pay for that. The problem is that you can't necessarily build those spaces inside the existing capitalist marketplace. You need to find places where there are sort of vacuums where individuals, where the market is not really all that interested in the existence of housing there. So, for instance, it is the case right now that there are something like 10 houses for every homeless person in the United States. But in the places where a lot of those empty houses are, places like Detroit or some of the exurban areas of the desert, you have city and state officials working with private corporations to bulldoze empty houses and just create vacant land again. And the reason that they're doing that is they want to create scarcity. This is the way capitalism works. If we were able to instead purchase some of those outright at very cheap, very below market values because nobody wants them, they're not actually on the market anymore, and bring people into them and cooperatively manage them and cooperatively own them, that would be massive amounts of housing without debt. Instead of purchasing it, just go occupy it. I mean, it's there. They're just trying to bulldoze it. They're not going to bulldoze it when you're in it.
What about if you are in it and they're coming to foreclose? Should you and your neighbors block the door?
Yeah, so that's been broadly successful throughout the United States. It hasn't been tried all that much, but when the sheriff comes to take you out, you know, you and your neighbors should just sit in front of the door. You've seen occupier homes have enormous success, particularly in Minnesota and Atlanta. And what they end up doing is shaming the banks into negotiating, shaming the banks into just letting the people stay in their homes. Because they know more often than not there's fraudulent activity going on that's trying to take people out of these homes. And there absolutely shouldn't be.
Wow. Well, we see these successes coming from direct action, and we see successes and potential at the local and state levels. At some point, at least in the distant future, one is going to have to mention the word Washington. And it seems to me that unless the breaks for the multi-billionaires and the trillion of dollars a year for militarism are dealt with, is going to be difficult to talk about the sort of money that's needed for making healthcare and housing and education and a safe environment rights rather than privileges and purchases.
I think you're absolutely right, but I want to just point out that it's not an either-or situation.
Absolutely not.
I don't think people need to be waiting for Washington to fix itself in order to fix their own lives, and nor do I think that fixing your own life is preventing yourself from trying to fix Washington as well.
Absolutely not. No question whatsoever. And if we wait for Washington, we will all die. But I wonder at the very, very small amount of times that that the money being shelled out for wars and weaponry gets mentioned anywhere by anybody. When we need money for useful things, we need money for human needs. Do we at some point have to stop being the country that spends more on wars than all the other countries put together?
Yeah, and I think you're exactly right. You know, we've pointed out a few times. One of our most popular blog posts, in fact, was pointing out that the amount of money that it would take to make a truly free, tuition-free, public higher education system in the United States, that every single state, 2- and 4-year college, is about $12.5 billion in new money. That's it, $12.5 billion in new money. That's not a typo. We did the math 10,000 ways. But it's simply a matter of priorities, right? So, you know, as you said, trillions of dollars spent on wars. You could cut any number of military programs and find that $12.5 billion.
Oh, but the Pentagon loses that. They misplace that much every year. Just gone.
That's exactly right. There are counting errors. That's just a rounding error in the Pentagon budget. So it's really, it would just be the slightest shift in priorities for policymakers. And the fact that they're not willing to make those shifts in priorities, I think, tells us everything that we need to know.
Well, it is absolutely terrific work that you are doing. I encourage everyone to go to rollingjubilee.org and give a dollar if that's what you have, or 10 or 100 or 1,000 if you can, and strikedebt.org/act to find other actions you can engage in. Anything else people should know, Aaron, before we let you go?
You should start resisting debt. The message of Rolling Jubilee is not that we can buy all of this debt, but it's that you now have the moral ammunition to have a very different conversation with debt collectors and with the types of debt that are being foisted upon you in your life. And we think that you should start having that conversation with a lot more confidence and knowing that you're not alone.
It's a wonderful thing for people to know. Aaron Smith is with Occupy Wall Street and StrikeDebt.org and RollingJubilee.org. Aaron, thanks for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you so much.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.